The elections in Ireland earlier this year saw Sinn Féin upset the long-standing prominence of the centre-right parties, and most recently, the leader of Fianna Fáil, Michael Martin, slammed the door on any coalition with the nationalist party, Sinn Féin. He reportedly accused them of supporting a murderous sectarian campaign, of bullying and anti-Semitism, and of covering up child abuse by IRA members. But on top of this, the issue of reunification has been revived. We're not going to dissect the machinations of what the next Irish government may look like, but instead the undercurrents of this election and the wounds stirred up by the Brexit debate over the past 3 years. Barbara Walsh is the chair of Glencree, a non-denominational charity devoted to transforming violent conflict through dialogue. Now, I spoke to Barbara last week and began by asking her about Glencree, 1 hour from Dublin and a former reformatory school for boys and young men. And I asked what happened to it then.
Well, before it was a reformatory, it was also a military barracks, a British military barracks, for about 25 years in the 17th century to suppress rebels that were in the Wicklow Mountains at that time. It was the first reformatory built in Ireland.
The word itself is wonderfully old-fashioned now, isn't it?
Reformatory.
Reformatory.
Yeah. Reformatory, exactly. So hundreds of boys went through the Glencree Reformatory for 90 years. So Oblate Brothers, a religious organisation, were invited from France by the then Archbishop of Dublin to set up this reformatory and run it. So a lot of the young lads that were there in the beginning were really there because of hunger, poverty, and really a lot of their parents had died in the famine.
And of course in 74 it becomes a centre for people running from the conflict.
It does. But before that it also was a refugee centre for German children after the Second World War. For about 5 or 6 years after the bombing of Dresden, the Red Cross and the Sisters of Charity brought young German children that had, at the time, really had nobody to look after them. And they lived in Glencree and were fostered by Irish families.
Barbara, what an extraordinary history.
It's extraordinary.
And how did you get your hands on it?
Well, that's a long story, but it became in 1974, it became a centre for conflict resolution. And really, it was set up as that then by a woman called Una O'Higgins O'Malley. And she herself was the daughter of the first Minister for Justice after partition. And he was shot dead, assassinated by anti-treaty forces. And his father was also shot dead. She was only a baby at the time, but her entire life, really, her grown life, was really contributed. She felt a strong sense of responsibility to be able to create a safe space that would enable two very different traditions to meet each other, to develop relationships in a world that was deeply divided and very sectarian.
Now, in order to be a credible conduit for discussions like this, you have to be trusted, and trust is in pretty short supply around the world at the moment. Mm. How do you win people's confidence?
Well, I think it's a slow process, you know, but I also think that Glencree has operated for 45, nearly 50 years. And there's one thing that it has really developed over that time is a sense of trust, being a non-judgmental space, an open space, a safe space that brought people, regardless of their view of the world, their opinions, and also sometimes the hurt that they had caused each other.
Can you give me a day in the life of the organisation? Describe how it actually operates.
So a day in the life of an organisation varies a lot, you know, and at the moment, for the last couple of years, as you're probably aware here in Australia, Brexit through the decision by the UK to leave the European Union was, it's often described by a colleague of mine in Star Wars parlance as a massive disturbance in the force, right? So if you imagine that Ireland, that there was peace of a kind with the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, and that we were kind of 20 years into post-conflict situation and things. Politics weren't great, but they were kind of settled down. People's identity, people started to relax around their identity because as part of the Good Friday Agreement, you could be Irish or British, or you could be both. You could have both. So when Brexit happened in the summer of 2016, it caused really a massive shock. And I suppose that the reasons that it caused that shock was it caused relationships and old wounds that were beginning to sort of heal in their own way to open up again. So basically, Brexit meant then that the division that the European Union, that the border between the European Union and the UK would be in Ireland.
Okay, let's just sort of remind the listener. We've done a lot of stories on Brexit, yeah, and the Irish border, but under Johnson's plan to bring the UK out, Northern Ireland remains attached to the rest of Ireland and in the EU, at least in terms of regulatory standards.
Yeah.
And customs to some extent.
Well, that was the part of the withdrawal agreement. The question at the moment is whether that withdrawal agreement will be honoured and what the implications of that will be.
But I know you argue that an all-Ireland economic zone doesn't equate to a united Ireland, does it?
No. Well, the whole question of unification, probably all over the world, but in Ireland, right, there's probably a microcosm of that in the sense that when we talk about unification, we're not talking about territorial unification, even though I guess that's an element of something. But we're also talking about the relationships that have been fractured, the relationships that don't exist, and about future relationships, not just on the island of Ireland, but also now between us, the island of Ireland and the UK.
Sinn Féin in the North demand a referendum on unification.
Yes. There is.
And there are quite significant rallies, are there not?
There, yeah, exactly. Well, the thing about Brexit, the decision of the UK to leave the European Union really in a way opened up and accelerated the debate for unification. So a border poll was a condition of the Good Friday Agreement. It was something that was there that would speak to the aspiration, especially of Republicans, that there would be a united Ireland, but only with the permission and only with the voting majority of both peoples, both on the island of Ireland, north and south.
Are all parties and sides open to discussing the possibility?
I think the question about unification is that it came really out of nowhere. And in some ways, certainly in the south of Ireland or in the public of Ireland, we weren't really prepared for that discussion. It was something that might happen in the future. But now the decision of the UK to leave the European Union and the pressure from Sinn Féin, both now north and south of the border, has accelerated that debate.
I'm talking to Barbara Walsh, who's chair of Glen Cree, the non-denominational organisation devoted to transforming violent conflict through building peace. Let us just go back to this fine institution of yours. Do you seek people out or do they come to you?
Both. So we have outreach. So basically we have people that go and speak to people. Again, because of the recent fractures that have occurred in relationships, we have people who go north to talk to one side or the other, and sometimes they don't speak to each other. So sometimes we invite them to Glencree to have a conversation or a dialogue around the issues that are of concern to them. So some of those issues vary a lot. Some of them are very tightly held positions. So, for example, if you're talking about a unionist population in Northern Ireland, which is almost like 1 million people at the moment, their identity is very much British, or it may be actively British and maybe passively Irish, you know, in that kind of way. But so their identity is very tightly tied to the UK. So
They're reluctant to even talk about it, aren't they?
They're reluctant to talk about it.
Yeah.
They are, because that is their worst fear. It's their worst fear that they would be part of United Ireland and they would maybe have to give up their identity. There's also other issues. There's a demographic shift that's happening at the moment.
What, in terms of age?
Of age, and also, so for example, in the north of Ireland, it's very likely in the next census, which is shortly, I think, that there will be more nationalists in the north than Protestant loyalists.
What about the influence of the church? That seems to have been in pretty dramatic decline.
Well, you probably are aware of the difficulties, really, that the church has felt across the island. And in some way or another, what all churches would say to you now is that they are losing members around all of that.
Everywhere.
Yeah. But saying that, there have been outstanding church people who have worked for peace, both in Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. There are people who have brought people together in the hardest of times and still stand in a post-conflict situation with people a lot of the time, where there's punishment beatings, where difficult things are happening in communities. So I, and that is clergy across the board. That's Catholics, Protestants, the whole thing.
I'm a bit guilty that you're in the studio because you're on holidays, you're visiting family. But this might be jumping a gun a bit, but perhaps the Australian federal model has some relevance.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you'd say that, because actually I had a conversation with somebody just about a week ago, and he was actually saying, you know, you should really have a look at the Australian federal model. And maybe before I go home, I'm hoping to talk to somebody maybe about that, just in terms of actually looking at different options. Because in some way or another, if we're going to talk about unification, and if we're going to talk about that in an inclusive kind of way, it may not be the way that people have had that in their heads in Ireland for a very long time.
It's fair to say you have been involved in back channel discussions.
Yes, yes.
Are they getting more fraught?
Back channel discussions vary. You know, sometimes they're information led, sometimes they're relationship led, sometimes they're victims of the conflict that come they come down to Glencree. So I suppose you probably know this already, but Northern Ireland and Ireland is a very small country in relation to your country. You know, so people have lived very close together.
Australia is absolutely chock-a-block with the Irish. As I was saying off air, about a third of us identify with Irish heritage.
I know, because I was talking to Dr. Christina Henry, that you know from Tasmania. You know, so she's done wonderful work in Ireland with women convicts. And there was no border when there were women convicts. They came from all over the country.
Look, the reason Australia got very left-wing, creating the trade union movement and the Australian Labor Party, was because of the bloody Irish. You're a dangerous lot. And talking about dangers, I've read an article about parcel bombs being sent by a group who call themselves the New IRA, warning, quote, that those who collaborate with the British, that they are to desist immediately, as no more warnings will be given. Our fight goes on. So clearly the tensions have risen.
The tensions have risen. And also, I suppose, you have to look at the conflict was 35 years old on a small space of ground, 3,500 people killed, over 50,000 violent incidents. You know, this is neighbourhood stuff. This is people were really hurt very deeply. But also it was felt that the Good Friday Agreement was seen by some as a betrayal, that it did not fulfil what it said that it was going to do in the beginning. So you have a splinter group, those that are in power at the moment and forsook violence for a political solution.
Well, you've got, in a sense, incipient violence on both extremes.
You have. You have. Yeah. Or the threat of it. Yeah. Or the threat of it. Yeah.
Heavens above. Look, Barbara, thank you very much for interrupting your holidays and coming into the program. Most grateful. Barbara is the chair of Glen Cree, a body devoted to transforming violent conflict through dialogue. You should open a branch here. We need you to.
Good night and thank you. Thank you very much.
That was Barbara Walsh, chair of Glen Cree, that Irish charity devoted to transforming violent conflict through dialogue. Yes, please, let's have some more of that.